This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. After 4 years of intensive work, the Cincinnati Museum Center will reopen to the public this Saturday. WVXU Tana Weingartner prepared this report on the revitalization of Union Terminal and the exhibits that will open there over the coming months. Here is the report.
Museum Center officials had known for years Union Terminal needed major repairs. Work done in the early 2000s wasn't enough to maintain the iconic building for another 100 years. Fast forward to November 2014, taxpayers approved a 5-year quarter-cent sales tax for restoration.
From the fall of 2014 to the fall of 2018, it has been nonstop.
CEO Elizabeth Pierce says design work began immediately. There were a million questions to consider, not the least of which is what to do with the museum's vast collections.
The Curate My Community initiative to move things out into the community was kind of driven by the necessity of having really large spaces for very large objects. It's hard to find a place to put a mastodon.
While artifacts were finding new homes, architects were finding new challenges. The drum wall holding up the rotunda was pulling away from the building and would have to be fixed. Turner Construction senior project manager Steve Swisher says that led to a few sleepless nights.
You've got everybody a little tense when you've got the backside of the dome murals essentially opened up to Mother Nature, but you're protected by several layers of plastic wrap, Tyvek, you name it, to try and keep the weather out.
Rain and water have long been the building's biggest enemies. Nick Cates is the project architect with GBBN.
The biggest goal of the project was to make the building watertight and to preserve the building for the next, 100 years.
That included vast exterior work, roofing, masonry. Specialized tradespeople were needed to restore certain areas using historical methods and materials.
All the mechanical, electrical, plumbing systems have been upgraded. We've introduced a new data system, fire alarm, pretty much everything mechanical, has been upgraded.
The front plaza and fountain were removed so crews could waterproof the museum spaces below. And in a major feat, the west wall behind the Omnimax was rebuilt while standing just 15 feet from an active rail line. The restoration is coming in on time and on budget, thanks in large part to extensive preparation and planning. But one of the most complex projects was a surprise. Massive steel beams between the plaza and the Children's Museum were more damaged than expected. Replacing them meant closing the Children's Museum, which was supposed to remain open throughout construction.
Actually, I think I made that recommendation.
Michael Burson is the owner's representative. His job is to coordinate between the museum, the contractors, and the architects.
That was a tough call, but it wasn't a hard call after seeing the conditions we saw.
Well, my first reaction was no. We have to keep it open.
Again, CEO Elizabeth Pierce.
And then we walked through the reality and the complexity of the work that needed to happen on the mezzanine level above the Children's Museum and how that would impact the visitor experience inside the Children's Museum. And we were kind of joking around a little bit that was maybe more interactivity than we really thought was appropriate.
8 steel beams, each weighing 12,000 pounds, had to be strategically lifted into place from the inside rather than lowered with a crane from the outside like a normal construction job. Though a disappointment, architect Nick Cates sees the closure as a blessing in disguise.
So they were able to get a lot of other things done more quickly than they would have had to phase differently if the building was open. So in a way, it was that period where they said, well, now let's shut down. Let's just do all the work in here and get that done rather than trying to spread it out at nights or some other time. Every cloud has a silver lining.
The museum will spend the next few years bringing exhibits back online and creating new ones with private funding.
Lots of people are excited to see Union Terminal reopen, and they say to me, oh, aren't you so happy that it's finished? And I smile and I say, thank you, yes, but we are on mile 2 of a 26-mile journey. Fixing Union Terminal is really the catalyst that allows Cincinnati Museum Center to be relevant to the community for the next 100 years.
Visitors get their first look at the renovated museum spaces, new dinosaur exhibits, and the perennial favorite holiday trains when the doors open Saturday. Tana Weingartner, 91.7 WVXU.
We are joined now by the CEO of the Cincinnati Museum Center, Elizabeth Pierce, and the Executive Director of the Nancy and David Wolfe Holocaust and Humanities Center, Sarah Weiss. The Holocaust and Humanities Center is moving to Union Terminal and will open new exhibits and programs in late January. If you'd like to join the discussion, please call 513 513- 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. The reason I'm laughing is I have my personal phone number in there, which I gave out on Monday. That's not a good idea. I do have to say that I have a conflict of interest here. In the year before I came to WVXU, I worked as the interim president of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, which meant that I worked directly for Elizabeth Pierce. But
it's not that big of a conflict, is it?
It's not a conflict anymore. So anyway, welcome both of you to Cincinnati Edition.
It's fun to be here.
And Elizabeth, what are people going to see that you know going to make them happy and see smiles on their face when they walk into the revitalized Cincinnati Museum Center at Union Terminal?
I think it starts with the drive-in. They're already kind of warm, glowing excitement when they see how clean the building is from the exterior, and then they understand that we took the entire fountain away and we put it all back and put some additional historic treatment.
Any extra pieces?
There might be. I might have something for you. And then walking in the front door, and you know well because of having been in that building so often, you know, people walk through the front door and they look up and they just, their mouths fall open and their eyes get big. And for me, the lighting change, we redid every light fixture inside Union Terminal. So it's all LED lights. It's very clean and white. It just makes the building glow from the inside out. So the colors of the rotunda are jumping off the walls at you. And there are colors in the rotunda mosaics that I don't think I've ever seen before because we did the cleaning of it. And so it's all bright and fresh. And then their mouths are – they're going to barely pick their mouth up off the floor before they walk into the dinosaur hall and have the same reaction over again. So these specimens that we are able to put on display, you know, one that was in Glenn's lab for 18-plus years coming back from Montana.
Glenn Storr,
the paleontologist. And the new specimens that we've acquired, I mean, these are incredible scientific specimens. So not only are they ferocious and huge in scale and have wonderful visual appeal for all of us as consumers or civilians, but people are calling the scientists here in town nonstop to say, when can I come and take a look at these animals?
Well, in my intro, I referred to it as jaw-dropping, and the dinosaur's jaw is very large jaw to drop. What won't people see that they might think they're going to see?
Well, I think key among it is that Cincinnati in Motion, the history display, the train display at the top of the History Museum, is not open just yet. It will come online, as will the cave and a few other things that you know and love well, over the course of the next several months. So be patient. This is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we literally moved back into the building on the 5th of November, but we wanted to get everybody back in as soon as possible for the holidays and then to be able to roll these things out. And OmniMax is coming online later December, early January. We're still figuring out the details of that brand new projection system that we're bringing in. So it's digestible bites for a period of time is how I would describe it.
And that's going to happen over, when you say a period of time, you said in the package that Tana provided, it's, you know, you're 2 miles into a 26-mile journey. I mean, this is going to take not just weeks, months. It's going to take years. Right?
I think it's going to be a couple of years before we're fully reoperational the way people might remember us in July of 2016 when we closed up and moved out for the construction. But what you can take advantage of now are the holiday trains, the dinosaur, a revitalized public landing that you're going to be very excited about, the special exhibitions of guitar and chocolate. And that's a nice and obviously the Children's Museum. So that's a nice, robust package that gets us through, call it the end of January. And then some of these other things will come online. And then we're doing private fundraising to make sure that we can build out those future exhibits that really bring science and history together in an exciting way. So probably 2 or 3 years.
Sarah Weiss, you're with the Nancy and David Wolfe Holocaust Humanities Center. How do you... You're moving in.
Yeah.
And those people who know your center know that it started at Hebrew Union.
Yeah.
but it's been now out in Kenwood for a number of years. Yeah. How do you fit in? Are you becoming part of the museum center? Are you somehow different than that?
So great question. We are the Holocaust and Humanities Center at Union Terminal. So we are very much in partnership with the Cincinnati Museum Center on a number of programs and ways to create a really seamless visitor experience, but we're remaining an independent organization. We were founded locally, as you know, Dan, by primarily Holocaust survivors and their families, and we're committed to maintaining our independence, but being a partner and part of what's happening not only at Union Terminal, but with our partners at Cincinnati Museum Center.
And Elizabeth, from your perspective, why is it valuable to have Holocaust Humanities Center moving in?
It's such a great partnership. And, you know, part of it is the serendipity of the tax credits. There were desires that we had additional tenants inside Union Terminal. And as I thought about who would be a tenant that I would like to partner with.
Let's just be clear. The historic tax credits, you needed people to be renting space.
Correct. That's the way the tax credits are set up, to give the investor back some level of revenue. And that doesn't really apply to us in the way our business model works, but we did know that we needed to find tenants inside Union Terminal to be a part of that process. And when I looked around and I knew Sarah was kind of looking for other space, we got together and said, this makes a nice relationship on so many levels. And you know, what I think the three of us know and treasure about Union Terminal is the history that it's had for our community during World War II. One in every five GIs that served in World War II went through that building. So without a doubt, we know that the liberators of the camps walked through the train station. And we know that the people who arrived in Cincinnati following World War II, the survivors of the camps, walked through those same steps. I mean, like Sarah and I have goosebumps all the time when we talk to people about that. So it's an incredibly relevant place. And, you know, the benefit of having easy access for school buses and classrooms and auditoriums and different spaces that there can be programming and convening and a complement to the education mission that we all have. It made so much sense.
The FBI just released shocking statistics. Hate crimes were up nearly 17% in 2017. That included a 17% rise in attacks on Jews. At least 976 cases involving 1,017 individuals. Couple that with horrific murders of 11 Jews as they prayed in their synagogue in Pittsburgh last month. The promise, never again, made at the end of World War II, is being put to the test in 2018 in the United States. To discuss what role we can play locally to confront this rising tide of hate, we are joined today by the CEO of the Cincinnati Museum Center, Elizabeth Pierce, and by the Executive Director of the Nancy and David Wolfe Holocaust Humanities Center, Sarah Weiss. If you would like to join our discussion, please call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Sarah, talk to me a little bit about what people will experience at the new center, the new Holocaust Humanities Center, especially given people who might know the Mapping Our Tears exhibit that has been up, which I have always said was the single best history exhibit in this region. Even though I work for other organizations, I did say that. Elizabeth.
We have you quoted,
Yes. And
you might have had a role in fabricating it.
I had absolutely no role. So, Sarah, talk about what will be there in the new center.
Sure. So, first of all, very similar, that's always been part of our philosophy, is telling the history through a local lens. That will remain in everything we do and everything we continue to curate and exhibit in the space. So, the permanent installation actually will start with a graphic novel mural that will share 25 vignettes of local stories, local survivors, local eyewitnesses like World War II veterans and liberators, other eyewitnesses, and that will sort of just start the visitor experience. You will meet those 25 individuals throughout the Holocaust Gallery and learn more about their stories as you walk through and experience the exhibitions. Of course, we're integrating media, artifacts, art. A lot of the exhibits, the way it's designed is somewhat chronological, but more thematic. And because the Holocaust actually didn't happen in a completely linear line, we know that people experienced it in different ways at different moments, but woven throughout will be those local stories. The experience actually starts with a theater, an orientation experience that is a local survivor who arrived at Union Terminal in 1941 and explains that her and her family arrived there, but what was happening and why they had to flee, and ultimately sets up the story. So all along, we're weaving in those local narratives, which is such a part of our concept from Mapping Our Tears and everything else we've done. In addition to the Holocaust Gallery and the media and the artifacts and the exhibition, we've also dedicated about 35% of the permanent exhibition space to our Humanity Gallery. So we are pivoting from looking at the past and looking at the lessons of the Holocaust to thinking about, you know, after we've talked about the darkest chapter in humanity, let's talk about what we can do better. And so we're pivoting to more contemporary issues. We're encouraging visitors to think about how they themselves, how each of us have the potential in our own ways to make a difference in the world. In that gallery, we'll use a lot more technology, media, projection mapping. It's set up in different zones, so we'll be covering topics like standing up against hate and protecting civil rights and responding to genocide, finding home, sharing our world. So themes that are about all of us and relate to all of us. But all of us have the potential to make an impact on these issues that are some global and some local.
I always say that an exhibit in a institution, a museum or whatever, is just that. It's there.
Yeah.
It's the programs you build around that exhibit that count. And the Holocaust Humanity Center really has been very creative over the years at doing that. Are there fresh programs that will grow out and frame this new exhibitry as well?
Definitely. We keep talking about activating which is probably a common way of thinking about the exhibits, but how do we activate the experiences for visitors? So how do we integrate things into the museum experience, but also then create programming off of that connects to the new galleries and the new ways we're interpreting the past and approaching things through art and media, and also the Humanity Gallery lends itself to programming perhaps for younger audiences than we focused on in the past as well. Outreach continues to be a big part of who we are and what we do.
Elizabeth, this is it has this real local connection. Mm-hmm. I mean, and local ties, very conscious, as Sarah was just explaining. But it also has an edge that is a little bit different than what people might have normally or traditionally experienced at the museum center. And how do you feel about that?
I think our role as a museum and the exhibits that we bring is to really provoke critical thinking and to promote critical thinking skills in all of the people who visit us. So I am excited for people to come to Union Terminal and have a variety of different experiences over the course of their lifetime as learning people. And so I think, you know, we'll always be a place where the Children's Museum comes and young families come. But I think to continue to have things that are challenging and intellectually stimulating as these students grow and become more teenager and high school and into college and adults, the arrival of Holocaust and Humanity Center with us is a piece of that complement that is going to keep people coming back to Union Terminal. And it puts it in such great context. And that's, you know, that's one of the things that I think we can do in this community in a number of ways.
Sarah, I, as thinking about this, especially in light of the way I set this segment up about the data from the FBI, about the murders in Pittsburgh, what can a cultural institution do through its exhibits and programs in the face of this kind of clearly deep-seated hatred that's embedded in our culture? What is the role here, and can we be – is this just off to the side, or can this somehow – actually make a difference?
So I think our role as an organization, as a cultural institution, is to encourage conversations, tough conversations about these issues. And so, you know, as we mourned with what happened in Pittsburgh, and by the way, many other incidences of hate that we've seen across the country with alarming rise, you know, I've only thought over the past several months in particular, wow, I wish we were open so we could have more opportunities to facilitate dialogue and conversations around these issues. I think we have a responsibility to speak up, to educate, to help people understand what's happening both in our community and beyond. And I think that there are ways in which that, especially the way we're curating the new exhibition, that we can have opportunities to bring in current issues. And hopefully we don't see a continuation of the trend, but unfortunately we may. And so how do we continue to talk about it and raise these issues?
And what is it that, Elizabeth, your staff might learn from Sarah's staff and from the Holocaust Humanities Center's experience over the next few years, because they don't know where it's really going to go, mm-hmm. and we don't know where this culture is going. Yeah. What might this do to enrich your programs?
I think it's going to be a great learning experience for everybody all the way through. Part of it is the strong narrative that goes on with what Sarah's describing, and I think that will help strengthen the storytelling and the visitor interaction in all ways across the museum, and help our folks know a little bit more about how to embrace and facilitate dialogue and help navigate some of those difficult conversations. So I think there's skills that will be built across the board, and ways in which families can come into that dialogue and really take advantage of how these things fit together.
You know, given my experience of last year at the Freedom Center, the Freedom Center has much, you could say much of what Sarah said about what you want to accomplish.
Yeah.
It seems to me there could be a real enrichment across that boundary too.
Absolutely.
100%.
And I know Sarah well enough. I know you well enough, Sarah, that it's not just about the Jewish experience.
Right.
It's about, and you mentioned civil rights, but the African-American experience, the Muslim experience today. And it might be a way of energizing across all sorts of boundaries here.
That's right. And I think there's a real opportunity because we're seeing an equal opportunity rise in hate, right? Certainly in the Jewish community and as far as anti-Semitism. But unfortunately, you know, maybe we have to take this moment and find ways to collaborate further. But it's certainly an opportunity we've been exploring with the Freedom Center now that we'll be closer, the opportunity we have to really create an experience that bridges the narratives, even though they're distinct histories and certainly have uniquenesses and all of that, but that there's a real important conversation because hate doesn't just affect one group. It affects all of us.
You know, one of the things that you've always faced because you've always been focused on survivors of the Holocaust and liberators, that generation is getting very old. Will there be people at your opening at the end of January who represent those two groups?
Yes. We are very fortunate that we still have a number of Holocaust survivors and World War II veterans and liberators who will be with us at opening. I have to say some of our survivors are telling me I'm making it, like I'm living to make it to your opening, which is, I hope, they live much longer, but it's really inspiring. And I think for them, it's incredibly powerful to think that they arrived at Union Terminal often without money, without family, without home, without anything, with no knowledge of what their future would be. And now, you know, 70 or so years later, their stories are going to be told in this iconic building is almost unbelievable for them.
Hmm. sort of the perfect place.
Yeah. It is, really.
Yeah.
So this Saturday, it officially opens to the public.
Yes, yes.
And you expect it to be super crowded?
It always depends on the weather, doesn't it? I'm hoping that people will come out and really get excited about, you know, and then holidays are right on the heels of it. So, you know, Saturday when you come, there's a photo booth. We'd love everybody to take their picture in the photo booth and add it to a little mosaic that we've made so you can kind of see yourself in the mosaics of Union Terminal. And we have a great virtual reality experience that Dave Lombardi and Kinetic Vision helped to put together, recreating the concourse that was torn down. So there will be plenty to see and do for the next couple months.
Okay. Well, Elizabeth Pierce, Sarah Weiss, thank you very much for being here. And I look forward to getting back in the building and without getting into detail,
we have
getting
volunteer
back into the library.
Absolutely. All of that is on the horizon, Dan.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.